balance of it.
Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 23rd. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes. Representative Isaacson moves approval of the minutes dated Monday, March 21st. Is there any discussion, corrections, or changes?
Very exciting.
Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails on a 1-0 vote. Members, today we are taking hearing about the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. I'll just remind members that while these departments have a wide purview in their authority, lots of ideas today, our conversation, the departments is individually focused on the supplemental budget. So first up, we have the Public Utilities Commission. And then we'll go to the Department of Labor and Industry after that. And then if the commissioner of BMS is here, we'll go to that. Otherwise, we'll if he's still over in the Senate, we'll take up the Baker bill and then come back to that in the finish. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Thanks, Representative Garofalo, for hearing us today on our supplemental budget request. It should just take a couple minutes to go through it. I believe that the slides have been provided, and let me just move into it quickly. My name for the record. I should know how to do this, right? Beverly Jones Heidinger. I'm chair of the Public Utilities Commission, and with me today is Dan Wolf, our executive secretary. We have a request that's tied directly to the bills that were passed during the special session at the end of last year. We had attached fiscal notes to those. Those fiscal notes were not funded, and so we're here today to try to get the funding that is tied to those additional responsibilities. And you'll see that it's laid out here, $225,000. We're only in the thousands at the Public Utilities Commission, I want you to all know. We are a small agency. $450,000 then for fiscal year 2017 and going forward. Essentially, these are costs to add staff, and I will just want to stress that in our case, we need to get this appropriation in order to expend the funds, which then are assessed back against the public utilities and collected back. So there is no net cost to the general fund. We're not ignorant of the fact, of course, that if it goes to the utilities, it can flow through then into their rates, but it is not a cost to the general fund. This is a list of the bills that were passed during the 2015 special session that have been identified as tied to fiscal notes that were not funded. It includes the authorization for us to do multi-year rate plans. Xcel has now filed a 3-year plan with an option for 5 years. Natural gas extension projects. This was partly in response to the high propane costs to allow for some utilities to come to us, get approval for extensions, and to recover their costs more quickly in order to help pay for that. The energy-intensive trade-affected rates that were authorized for some of the public utilities to help address costs to their industrial customers. Biennial distribution planning and cost recovery. This is an additional responsibility to transmission planning. Now, as there's more interest in adding generation at the distribution level, it's necessary for the utilities to do more distribution level planning, and we were given the authority to require that and to review those plans. Similarly, with more distributed generation, there's a request from the utilities for additional rates and tariffs, and also our interconnection technical requirements were written over 20 years ago, long before the number of small generators were seeking to be added to the distribution system. So all of those are bills that were passed last year, and at a time when right now the commission, in addition to having the most utility rate cases that anyone can recall, we currently have 5 for 3 gas companies and 2 electric companies. We also have several other big projects underway, and including pipelines and fuel clause adjustments and a number of others. So there isn't any capacity within our current staff to take on these additional responsibilities without some additional assistance. And of course, there has been a big push for more solar, both utility scale solar and solar gardens. those laws were passed in 2013, and our workload was, our complement was not increased as a part of that legislation as well. So our staff is very strapped. In addition, there is a bill being offered as part of the Department of Commerce energy legislation to site solar energy facilities that are smaller than the current statutory limit, which is 50 megawatts. And so if that bill were to pass, we would need a small amount of additional funds to take on the responsibility for siting these smaller solar projects. And these are the funds that we would anticipate needing to do that. So our totals are reflected here on this last page, $225,000 for fiscal year 2016, and then you'll see the other numbers going forward as part of our base. So that is the extent of my presentation. Representative Garofalo, if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them, or members.
Just one thing before I forget, if you could, I neglected to get your cell phone yesterday when we met, so if you could text me your number, I got to share something with you.
Sure.
We get a chance.
I'd be glad to.
So it's totally professional, don't worry.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt.
Totally normal.
Crowd is gasping. Yeah, strike that from the record. Representative Fabian. Why does everyone always assume I'm up to no good? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Heidinger, I have a couple of questions. With regard to the increased workload, and you mentioned the solar mandate that was passed in 13, it's maybe more of a question for staff. Was there a fiscal note that was attached to that in 13 that we could get to see if that was then reflected in the budget that was passed to make up for that?
I think, Representative Fabian, I think we'll unless staff has that number memorized at the top of their head.
No, I know they don't.
Okay, so maybe we'll just, if we could add that to today's questions, and we'll follow up with whether there was a fiscal note or not. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Chair Heidinger, I'm curious about something that was brought to my attention yesterday with regards to solar and distributed generation. In 2014, we passed a bill addressing the concerns on net metering. And as I understand, the co-ops, rural electric co-ops, have come up with a plan to help recover their costs that are involved in bringing those small solars online. It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that situation is going to be heard by the Public Utilities Commission.
Chair Garofalo, Representative Fabian, we have a number of dockets related to distributed generation. I'm not certain that I know specifically of the one you're referring to, but if you want to contact me, I can certainly try to help figure out exactly which of those you're referring to and when it may be scheduled with us. I'm not aware of a specific docket coming up immediately on that topic.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess then, just to kind of plant the seed on the discussion that we may have, is I'm curious to know about, you know, by what authority, because the rural electric co-ops are not regulated. And I just want to kind of get my arms around why the PUC, which is a regulator, is taking up these cases, and maybe someone from the co-ops is here in the room can help me out with this, and we can take it from there.
Sure. Chair Garofalo, Representative Fabian, that I can answer. There is provisions in the bill in two ways. One is that if a charge is imposed and complaints are raised about that, the statute says that those should be brought to the Public Utilities Commission. And also there's a tie to their cost of service study or their cost of service. And so those complaints can be raised. We actually have had two formal complaints filed with us within the last few days.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then the final would be, again, for staff with regards to the stuff that was passed in the last legislative session. Was there a fiscal note attached to that, and was there a reflection on the PUC? Thank
on
you.
The fiscal note on the net metering changes?
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be the second question. All right, any other questions for the commissioner? Thank you very much for being here. Great to see you both again.
Thank you.
Next, we got the Department of Labor and Industry. Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. And I'm here today just to bring up a supplemental budget change item that's been recommended by the governor in his budget for $250,000 to go into our department's annual base budget from the Workforce Development Fund for our apprenticeship unit. We'd raise our total budget there from $779,000 to $1.029 million. Basically what it do would pay for two full-time people in our apprenticeship division to help them promote and develop apprenticeships around the state in various areas. The apprenticeship is a neat thing. It's a good thing that we have about 11,500 apprentices right now in our system. About 80% of them are in the building trades, 20% are in a variety of other fields. You go in there and you go through a structured learning program. You're earning a living. At the same time, you're getting some on-the-job instruction as well as taking some classroom instruction and some safety stuff. The period of an apprenticeship can go from anywhere from 2,000 hours to, I think, the highest one is 7,500 hours. You go, and when you graduate or when you earn your finish your apprenticeship, you get a nationally recognized credential. You can take around and be hired any place on any job that recognizes that credential. It's like a college degree that you can use. So it's a good program. We'd like to increase it, develop more. We'd like to get more minorities. We'd like to get more women, more veterans. We're making some progress in that area. We need to do better. We'd like to get more businesses in it too. That we just need people to go out there and promote it and develop it. We spent a lot of time going to high schools and to career events, that sort of thing, trying to encourage apprenticeship. And I think it's working. I think we're getting more people into it. And but I think it's a good alternative for people who don't want to go to college or found out the college doesn't work for them, but an apprenticeship thing does. So certainly encourage you to approve the $250,000.
And that's it. No other asks. Just that.
No
one
other
thing.
Asks. No other asks.
You're the greatest commissioner ever. All right. Any other?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that assessment.
Great. Do you still have like the boxing commission underneath?
Yes, we do. I'm very proud of our.
Yeah, I have a question for you. What are we going to do to get a UFC fight here? What are you doing in your department to make that happen?
I'm going to assign these two new apprenticeship people to.
any other questions for the commissioner? Commissioner, thank you very much. Appreciate your.
Thank you very much.
Dinner.
Thank you, members.
Is the commissioner of Bureau of Mediation Services here, Commissioner Tilson? There you are. And again, reminder to members that we're just doing an overview of supplemental changes. Lots of departments have lots of other agencies, but today or lots of activities. But we're focused on their activity. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Josh Tilson. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Bureau of Mediation Services. I'm here to ask you to support the Governor's supplemental budget recommendation for the Bureau of Mediation Services. There are essentially two asks. One is a $250,000 one-time appropriation to help us complete our project to build a client web portal, and to $100,000 to the base beginning in the first year of the next biennium to support that web portal. That web portal will be doing two things. One is enabling our clients to manage their cases themselves. Right now, much of that stuff's done with paper, and it's a little bit of an outdated system. And many others, both state and federal agencies, are using modern web portals. And then the second thing is a $138,000 increase to the base in FY17 to support the Office for Collaboration and Dispute Resolution. Some handouts were distributed to all of you on the Office for Collaboration and Dispute Resolution. And I just want to take just a moment of your time to call out the good work that's being done by the Office for Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, which includes our community mediation service agencies throughout the state of Minnesota that do conciliation, court mediation, neighbor-to-neighbor mediation, landlord-tenant, family, business, consumer, business employee, police commuter, and police officer training, victim offender, restorative justice, custom ADR workshops, problem solving, and facilitation. We think these services are really valuable to all the communities, and if you talk to some of the leaders in your communities, you'll find they're widely praised and very widely used in all the communities throughout Minnesota. The second part of this office does public policy and collaborative solutions for intergovernmental matters. Some examples of the work that they've been doing include the child custody dialogue, which a lot of you heard about and were familiar with. You passed a law based on that last year. We've worked, there's a list of things here, the Marshall Lyon Library, the MNSCU Charting the Future Initiative, a number of city council matters that we got involved in, the Minnesota Department of Health, and the Minnesota Community Measurement, the St. Paul Schools, the Capital Preservation and Arts Subcommittee, Metropolitan Waste Control Commission, the Governor's Water Summit, and one that you've read about quite a bit recently, which is the problems with worker injuries and patient-centered care at the Minnesota State Security Hospital at St. Peter. So that's our request, and if there's any questions, I'm happy to respond to any of them.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner? Refresh my recollection. I remember last year we extended the window by which BMS was not responsible for certain disputes for, remember that?
I'm glad you're asking about that.
Yeah.
I actually have a note to myself, which I ignored about that. Mr. Chairman, the governor's recommendation this year is for additional funding for PERB, but also to sever it from the BMS's budget. And so I'm not testifying on behalf of that portion of the supplemental budget. It was delayed until January 1st of 2016. There are members of the PERB here today to talk to that budget request if you're interested in hearing from them. There's at least one or two board members and their acting executive director here this afternoon who would be happy to answer any questions that you have about the PERB. But we made a decision that because they're independent and because they have at least a small role in challenging or in hearing appeals of decisions of the commissioner of the Bureau, that it would be better to sever them from our budget. And so that's the proposal this year.
Okay. That might be a good idea if once we're when you're complete with your testimony, we'll do that. But does it, is the PERB expire on, was it January 1st of this year or is it January 1st of next year?
Expire?
No, I'm sorry. The we had temporarily set it up so that
yes,
they're going
July 1st of, is the first day of the next fiscal year, 2017, so it would be okay. July 1st of 2016, that they are responsible where the law makes them then responsible to hear and decide and resolve unfair labor practice complaints.
But we're in 2016 right now. That would
right, so it'll be July 1st of this year.
Oh, I thought it was January. Okay, it's July 1st, not
it's
January 1st.
Year,
there's numbers and letters, and I'm confused. I'm sorry. So July 1st, not January. Sorry.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, if there's someone from PERB who can just come down and briefly cover that, that would be helpful. Certainly not required, though, if you're not ready to testify. I thought you were saying January. I'm losing my mind. Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Laura Cooper. I'm an alternate member of the Public Employment Relations Board appointed to represent the public interest.
And my name is Nicole Blissenbach. I am a member of the Public Employment Relations Board representing public employees.
And before you begin, let me just ask, are you prepared to testify on this, or would you prefer to defer this for another hearing?
I'm prepared to testify.
Thank you. Please continue.
Sure. The Public Employment Relations Board was created by the 2014 legislature and charged with a responsibility that had previously been vested in the state district courts. That's the responsibility for adjudicating unfair labor practices that may arise in the public sector involving state and local government entities. At the time the legislation was passed, the sum of $125,000 per year was appropriated as startup funding to get the board operating before it became operational. The funding, however, for the present calendar year and fiscal year continues at that sum of $125,000, which was not at all designed as an operating budget. As the chairman has mentioned, starting on July 1st of this year, parties can no longer go to federal district court and need to file unfair labor practice charges with our board. We need to have hearing officers to consider cases. The statute mandates that we have investigators. Our hearing officers have to be legally trained. We have determined a budget that would cover the basic costs that are statutorily mandated, and that is the additional sum in the governor's supplemental budget proposal of $400,000. This is quite a bare bones budget. We have some details if you would like to see them, but we're prepared to answer questions you may have. The funding is exceedingly important because if we do not have operating funds, the public will come to us with unfair labor practice charges. They cannot go to district court if we do not have the funding to have investigators, to have hearing officers, to have review of hearing officers' decisions. The public will have nowhere to go, and the legal rights established in PELRA would be inaccessible to them.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm a member of the Public Employment Relations Board representing public employees, and I am also here to answer questions. I have nothing further to add to what Laura Cooper just mentioned.
Obviously the current statute expires on July 1st with regards to when the responsibility goes from the federal court back to PERB, correct?
Yes, I don't know. I would say it expires, but the new one goes into effect, yes. Mr. Chairman.
The extension of the, right now under current law, for these disputes they go to district court, and on July 1st that responsibility is transferred from the district courts to PERB. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just want to clarify, it's state court, not federal court.
Yep.
No. And then, there's that issue, then there's the appropriation for additional funding to actually operate things. And then last year there was an open meeting law policy change that was being sought. Are either of you familiar with that? The current law, the interview process for a director?
Perhaps Ms. Blissenbach can speak to that, but it had to do largely with deliberations of the PERB. The PERB is an adjudicative body, just like a court. When the members of the state Supreme Court go in to deliberate cases, those are not open meetings, and we were asking for the same treatment of deliberations of the PERB.
Did you wish to add anything?
I agree with that comment. Yes.
Is the PERB seeking that language again this year?
It has not. We have not proposed that language in the House at this point. So it is still awaiting the Senate floor in the Senate. But
are you requesting it from the legislature, though? Do you want the legislature to do that still?
We haven't put forth anything this year at this point in time.
Okay. Any other questions for the testifiers? Seeing that, thank you very much. Appreciate, especially being on the spot there. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Baker, the broadband maker, you're up. All right, so members, just to kind of level set the playing field of where we're at today, Representative Baker is going to be moving this bill for possible inclusion in a later bill. We're not going to be taking action or moving it today. That being said, there are some substantive amendments. Generally, we don't take testimony on the amendments, but given the size and scope of this bill, as well as the intricate policy discussion, I'm going to take public comment on these amendments because they are in-depth, they're technical, and it's great. It's better for members to have an understanding on them. But again, whether we adopt the amendments today or don't adopt the amendments today, I think that it's important that members stay engaged on this issue and those in the public who are going to be advising and informing legislators that process does not end today. It's going to continue going forward. And so, again, this is a complex matter, but I want to make sure that people know that, you know, regardless what the committee does today, this may or may not be the way things are in the omnibus bill. We don't know if we're going to have a target yet. If we do have a target, we don't know what it's going to be. We don't know what we're not done hearing competing appropriations proposals. In addition, on the policy side, the changes in this bill are just very difficult and intricate, and we want to make sure we, at least today, understand where people are at on this stuff. So Representative Baker moves House File 2381 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Baker, before we start taking up the bill, do you have any amendments you wish to offer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do.
What's up, Mr. Baker?
Excuse me. I've got the First Amendment has a number of issues to clarify that. I don't know if it's if there's a number to this amendment. It's the one that we sort of worked on. after it came out of greater Minnesota workforce.
All right, so this is the A8 amendment. Is that true, Representative Baker?
No, I don't have that number here. Let's see. I think it's the... Let's see here.
I think it's A8, Representative.
I've got A8, which is really talking about the wireless component. Is that right?
Yes.
That was going to be, I'd like to accept that as well, but I just want to make sure I'm getting the right one. Thank
so
you. This is the right
this
number.
This is an author's amendment. And again, generally speaking, we let the author Thank have you. The bill in the format that they would like. But I do think that this is something I've been contacted on. So are there any members, first of all, before we go to member questions or comments, are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the A8 amendment? A8.
A8, yes.
Representative Johnson.
I think, Mr. Chair, I would like to voice some concerns, but maybe I'd like to hear from the author explain it first from his perspective.
Sure. And again, generally, an author's amendment, we just adopt it to allow it to be included, and then we take up the bill on if it's amended. So if we're going to allow the author this opportunity, then I would just prefer to put it into the bill so you can explain the entire context of the bill rather than cherry-picking out the individual aspects. On the other hand, if it's if people in the audience want to testify on just this amendment, I want to give that opportunity too. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, the A8 amendment substantially changes the House File 2381. I would ask that the author explain what he's changing so I understand. I mean, I'm happy to get it in the conditions that he wants the bill. I just want to know what we would be letting him in on. I'm not sitting here saying no. I just want to know what page 2, line 15 means or what he's changing from at least 100 to 10. What does that do to his bill? I'm not sure what he's doing here.
Well, Representative Baker, which staff member drafted this amendment?
Yes.
You work with nonpartisan staff on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Eliav helped me quite a bit on this drafting this document.
So why don't you do a high-level overview of it, sure. And then I'll go to Mr. Eliav to provide additional comments on it, or do you want me to go vice versa?
I can actually give a high view, if that's right, Mr. Chair, to the representatives. Maybe I can answer some of those questions, so they're good ones, and I expected to be covering those anyway. So in the A8 amendment, that does change, and a lot of this actually came from the Greater Minnesota Workforce Committee that we had really good discussion on, and it was not a policy or a finance committee, so we really weren't able to talk about that, but we heard some really good stuff in there that we wanted to change, and we made those following changes. So if I can step through it, the first one, 1.2, we deleted a number of lines. We actually want to clarify some of the last mile infrastructure definitions, so 2.10 through 2.14, we're just going to eliminate that stuff, and I've got some new language coming right behind it. So just to clarify that. And let's see, we're going to insert then 1 through 7 and 1 through 10 on the updates from this amendment to kind of talk about what is the middle mile, last mile infrastructure. We're trying to clean this up a little bit. Moving forward, 1.12, again, we want to make sure that we're using all the technology but not limited to wireless. We're also looking at the speeds, 10 megabytes per speed download, 1 megabyte upload. Again, we've got some issues here with the VoIP, and then again, I may refer to Mr. Eliav for that if we have any more questions on that. 1.17, page 3, under the vendor component of this, we've wanted to eliminate the word cost. We want to make sure that that information is not going to be too proprietary for vendors that are out there doing that, so we simplified that a little bit, hearing some concerns about that. And again, the incumbent language, page 3, line 28, we know the incumbent language is going to be something we'll talk a lot about, too. We wanted to make sure the word shall was changed to may. We wanted to soften that up and make sure that we aren't forcing anybody to do anything that wants to move ahead broadband in our neighborhoods. With that, that kind of gives the overview, and I'll take questions, and maybe Mr. Eliav can help me with that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Eliav, did the author cover it, or you want to add anything?
I'll take questions.
Just pull up your mic.
Why don't we take questions, Mr. Chair?
Right. Any additional representatives?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the opportunity to comment on it because it is, like you say, a complicated issue that requires some attention, I think. I'll say a couple things I have problems with right off the bat is striking lines 10 through 10 through 14 on page 2, the last mile, middle mile, I think that's for our broadband network throughout the state of Minnesota. That's essential infrastructure, and clearly we would not want to remove that. The same on line 111, not funding the installation of middle mile and last mile. Certainly have a problem with that. Probably the biggest problem I have, though, I think, is that the amendment itself waters down the broadband grant program to be biased towards 10-1 wireless and 10 megabits down and 1 megabit up. And 10-1 is basically the dial-up of our generation. And for the state to be investing, the state should be investing in the long-term future in a way that's going to make the state stronger and greater and better. I think investing in 10-1 wireless is not the way to go. You want to have something that has what you call scalability, that you can, as broadband speeds improve, that you can, and applications require faster things, you want to be able to have in place a network that can do that, such as fiber optics that can go 100-100. The investment in wireless, which I think is a good complement, an important complement to the wireline industry, but to bias grant giving towards the wireless approach to providing broadband, I think, is definitely the wrong direction. And the 10-1 speed is, like I said, essentially a dial-up approach to broadband at this point in time. So with that, Mr. Chair, I strongly recommend a no vote towards this particular amendment. And we're not voting on it, I'm sorry. But that's my comments.
Well, the committee will take action on the amendment because we formally have to do it. But generally, we don't oppose authors when they say, hey, this is my bill,
right,
and I want to have it in this form. So I don't.
Right.
Representative Johnson, the definitions, I think Representative Baker is just deleting the definitions, right? What's the controversy in that?
Which part are you looking at?
You had highlighted E and F, lines 2.10 through page 2, lines 10 through 14. It's just the definitions he's getting rid of. How is that? You had in your statement, you had questioned that. How is that controversial, or is there something I'm missing on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think we shouldn't be removing the line, the acquisition and installation of middle mile and last mile infrastructure. And I don't think we should be moving towards provision of retail, not limited to wireless at 10-1 as our the point that we're going to be funding.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I think one of the amendments part of this as well, we want to move the 10-1 to 10-3. If you'll see that also on page 2, line 23 on that. I failed to mention that in my overview. Part of the discussion today we're going to have is that difference of 10-1, and what we're all fighting and shooting for here is 25-3. That is the state broadband task force's recommendation to, we got to get to that point as soon as we can. The state wants us to be there by 2022 and to grow after that. I want to keep this moving target of speed goals somewhat aggressive but also attainable. So I agree that 10-1 is not something that we're shooting for. The grant applications today are not meant to be done at 10-1 speeds. The 25-3 speed is a very important component to this bill. And so to just identify the unserved and the underserved areas, we want to identify 10-3 as the new number just because it's higher than the federal. I don't agree with that either. But we have to have a number that we can live with. But our goal here today is that everything that we're talking about has to be able to hit 25-3. That is a number that I want us to all remember that about that today.
Okay. Well, before I close public comment, is there anyone who wishes to comment on this amendment specifically? Come on down, sir. I know. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name to the record. And we're discussing the A8 amendment right now.
My name is Rick Keller. I'm the first to represent the Twice Exceptional and Print Disabled.
We're not on TV.
It's my understanding, I don't know I understand. I'm not real sharp on the fact of how fast information be transferred on the internet. I'm just wondering if Office Enterprise Technology or Minute weighed in, since they're a content accessibility specialist regarding the transfer of information, or is this basically in the hands of the vendors, or who?
This is the Office of Broadband Development.
I understand the broadband, and this is postal service to schools, the underserved and underrepresented statute 120B15, which include the twice exceptional English language learners, ethnic, and economically disadvantaged. The question is, again, was Minute involved regarding functionality as it relates to these wires and it relates to the content on both ends? That's a specific question. If the chair would yield to that question.
The answer to the question is no.
That's the question, if the individual here or somebody in the meeting can yield to that question, if Minute was involved in that.
I just did. The answer is no. That is a completely unrelated topic to the A8 amendment and the discussion we have before us.
Okay. Well, I just thought wires, how they wired with both ends and how you transfer information currently is aggressive enough to meet the needs of kids that are in K-12.
So. No, the bill and the amendments do not address content whatsoever.
I understand it doesn't address content, but when it comes to functionality regarding the internet, regarding what can be transferred over the internet, and I believe they mentioned it was 100 and they changed it to 10, I believe.
Yeah, this amendment does not address those issues, sir.
Okay, I'll retract my discussion. I just thought I'd understand this better.
Thank you for your testimony. Yep. Is there any members of the public who should testify? Ms. Kelleher. And then we're going to do public comment on the amendment, and then we're going to go to Mahoney.
So,
Please state your name for the record so we know who you are.
Margaret Anderson Kelleher, Chair of the Broadband Task Force, and I think I'll be with you later on to give some more testimony on this issue of scalability and the 100 megabit scalability. I guess I would, after working on this issue for 5 years, really prefer that, since what you have said at the beginning of this hearing, and I know that there are issues with wireless being scalable to 100 megabits, strongly prefer that you not drop it down to 10 and 1 today. That would be really a quite big move backwards. So I don't know how you handle this amendment right now, but that would be quite a big move backwards in terms of where this program has been. I don't know what the right number is, but I do know that 10 and 1 is probably quite a big leap in the wrong direction.
Representative Baker, do you want to cover the 10.3 versus the 10.1, just so everyone understands that?
Well, and again, thank you, Mr. Chair. The idea of this is to recognize, you know, at least wireless as being an option. I think that the broadband office has done some granting with that in the past, so they've recognized that too. However, the 10.3, as far as I understand it, maybe again, Mr. Eloff can correct that. And actually, Chair Anderson here too, I respect her so much. But to see that being a option out there right now and have the capacity to get up to 25.3, that's our goal. But to recognize that as being actually a doable speed, that's an important component to this. And so we feel like it should be part of this. We certainly don't want to go backwards. We want to recognize the 25.3 goals set by the Broadband Task Force, Mr.
And
Chair.
Representative Baker, that's Speaker Anderson Kelleher.
I should have known. Yes, I know.
So just to be clear, though, your amendment is increasing the 10.1 to 10.3.
For the definitions of unserved and underserved. Yes.
Okay, so that's, it's not, so the 10.1 is deleted for the 10.3. Speaker Kelleher, your comment, just so everyone understands this, is that we don't want to be coming in lowballing bandwidth rates. Representative Baker, what you're saying is by investing in this technology now, if you do the infrastructure side of things, this gives you the capability to go higher, to raise it future, increase those rates. But by putting the infrastructure in place right now, you have the underpinnings to allow that going forward right. As technologies adopt. So Representative or Speaker Kelleher, do I call you Speaker Kelleher? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I think.
Called her other things. So have I.
So those are the kind of the two positions here. One is that, no, we should be aiming for the stars.
Representative Baker is saying, well, from a wireless perspective, you can come in and you can make a dramatic improvement sooner, quicker, cheaper, and then have scalability to go higher. Kind of, if I stated that right, give me the kind of the your side of it more.
So, Mr. Chair, without getting into too much of the issue of unserved versus goals here. So Representative Baker is doing a very good thing on the unserved, which is saying by moving to 10-3, he's saying we're measuring who is unserved in the state with a 10-3 as the measurement. That's a very good thing in moving his amendment. So anyone below that, we're going to say they don't have adequate, and they're going to be first in line to get the grants. That's good. What by removing the 100, though, that was a piece that Representative Simonson and others worked on very hard a few years ago to say, when giving the grants, these important limited public dollars in the state of Minnesota, and Representative Kreisha, a few years ago, these limited public dollars, when these investments are made, public, private dollars, they should be scalable up to speeds of 100 megabits. And so that's what I'm asking you to consider not removing here. Now, I know that the technology issue is that wireless can't necessarily get up to that speed symmetrically. I'm just asking you to consider today not removing that out of the amendment. And so I think that they're not incompatible. We're just saying let's measure the unserved as 10-3 and keep the goal in place. And I do think there is an issue that Representative Johnson has identified as well about middle mile and last mile infrastructure. That gets to a whole different issue we'll talk about later on. But I think the biggest thing I'd argue to you today, Mr. Chair, is that removing that 100 is a really big change in the program.
Okay. All right. So other comments from members of the public? And again, I just want to remind everyone, I know this is kind of different. You can understand why normally we would just take the Baker Amendment and we would put it in there. But I want people to understand this because this is a conversation we're going to be having a lot of. So welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Wirtz. I'm the state president for AT&T Minnesota. As I read the amendment, and I should also add that I am a member of the Governor's Broadband Task Force, the amendment is not meant to limit middle mile. It is to expand broadband grant opportunities basically to what the state has already done in awarding a grant to a wireless company here in Minnesota. MVTV Wireless received about $800,000 from the current round of broadband grants. Now that went to the backhaul portion of their network, but the end user of that service, they're getting 5 megabits. So they're not even getting 10. This is similar to what we're going to be doing as part of our CAF-2 funding right across the river in Wisconsin. We're going to be providing fixed wireless local loop. This is not new technology to 24,000 rural residents in Wisconsin. In fact, over a million in our 18-state footprint that we're going to be doing with some of the funds that we're taking from the federal government on this service. So the intent, as I read it, is to really open up that grant program to other fixed wireless providers like MVTV and expanding their network and other providers, similar to what Wisconsin did last year. They have a firm, GoGebeckRange.net in northwest Wisconsin, $50,000 grant that they matched with their funds, and they're providing 3,000 residents and 30 businesses with high-speed internet, 5 to 10 megabits. There really is no limitation on the speeds. I mean, these things, all it takes is spectrum, and we continue to see those speeds get faster and faster. I think that's why the federal government recognized this as a deliverable rural broadband solution. So that's how we read the amendment.
Okay, so we have multiple issues for the committee to consider. Let me just run through them. There's the unserved versus underserved definitions that people need to be aware of. There's the question of how the wireless grant, there was a grant given for a wireless project that is not capable of 100 megabit. We want to talk with the department about that to explain why that was allowed. There is the capability of 100 versus 10, and then the fourth item is the CAF funding and the integration and lack thereof with the state funding program. So, yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Chair, they received the grant under the current guidelines. Their scalability, the 120 synchronous, or the 100 synchronous, that was the backhaul portion. That was the fiber component of their network.
Right, but
other providers wouldn't, for example, even like AT&T, if we were to do that, we would not be eligible today under the current guidelines because of that 100 synchronous requirement.
But the point I'm making is the end users are not getting, and they can't get right now based on current technologies, these download rates.
That's
but they
correct.
Were funded through the existing program.
That's correct.
Which somebody may ask the question, well, if they're allowed to fund it that way now, why do we need to change in language to have it funded the other way? You don't need to answer those questions, but someone watching this would say, well, geez, if people are getting slower than 100 meg service and the program and they're allowed to do that under the current program, why does there need to be a change? We don't need to answer that now, just one of the things. All right, so thank you very much for your testimony. Is there any additional public testimony or members of the public? Come on up, sir. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record. And let me just restate for members again, we're going to be laying this over, so it's just a good... Today we go to class on technology, which I love. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for
Thank
the record.
You. My name is Bill Coleman. I'm a consultant with Community Technology Advisors. And I want to talk briefly about the idea of the state broadband goal prospectively being 25-3. The State Broadband Task Force set a goal, recommended a goal of 100 megabits by 20 megabits by 2026. And so I think it's important to keep our eyes on that prize. 2022 to 2026 is a pretty short time frame. And so I also want to talk about that 25-3 standard, which is tied to the federal FCC standard. That now, in 2008, that standard from the federal government was 768K, less than 1 megabit. If we looked 8 years forward using that same rate of change, the FCC standard would be 750 megabits. And so the idea of tying Minnesota's grant programs to a 25-3 standard seems like funding last year's technology. The marketplace now, all over the state with the rural telephone cooperatives, with Comcast and CenturyLink here in the Twin Cities, is a gigabit service. U.S. Internet in Minneapolis, 10 gigabit residential service. You can argue whether that's necessary or whatever, but the marketplace where people are technology strong and literate are going to those levels of bandwidth. So I just say that I believe that any state funds should go to services that can deliver 100 megabits today, not scalable, but that we invest our limited dollars, even if it's $100 million, so they're still limited compared to the need out there, to keep our investment strong. A wireless investment, if an entrepreneur wants to do that wireless investment, those are relatively low-cost things. They should be able to fund that through the private sector to meet today's needs. But if we look forward, we should keep our eyes on that 100 megabits.
In your any questions for the testifier? In the Broadband Task Force's deliberations, why did they choose 100? Why was it 100 versus 25 or 50? What are the services that can be done at that level versus the 25?
Well, I think we have companies all over the state of Minnesota that need 100 megabit or gigabit level services. We have in the standard household now, people have 15, 20, 25 devices that are connecting to the internet. With the Internet of Things emerging, where your refrigerator and washing machine, your thermostats are connected to the internet, houses will have hundreds of devices that are connected on a regular basis. So there's not necessarily one application that needs 100 megabits. It's a combination of having three or four kids doing their homework, mom or dad working from home. And especially now with the ability for people to work from home, people who are engineers or graphic designers increasingly need those levels of services.
And I don't want to nerd out on the committee here. I'm a network engineer. So, I mean, like, you know, 25 meg download, that's a lot. And even for a person, in my household, if we had 25 meg and I was VPN'd in and my wife was watching Netflix streaming it on her iPad and my daughter was streaming the service on a TV, on another, like an Amazon Prime, and my son was doing his homework, 25 meg would accomplish all those things. And so I'm trying to, so what is the differentiation between 25 and 100? What are the services that are being held back at a 25 level versus 100?
Well, I think the question is whether it's investment for today's needs or state investment for tomorrow's needs. And I think the idea that you would video conference, that you could have the technologies to have essentially hologram kind of entertainment in your homes, hologram kind of video conferencing. We're talking, once again, a state investment for a 20 to 30 year capital investment in fiber optics and technology. I think we need to look, with everything else we talk about, it's, you know, what's a long-term approach to this infrastructure. And I think we've seen, you know, it wasn't long ago that people said, and the president of MVT Wireless used to say, well, why would anyone need more than 1 megabit? Well, now he's delivering 5 megabits because his customers need it. And I think we've seen that scale once again from the FCC standard of less than a megabit to 25 megabits today. We've seen that rate of change. And I'm no tech guru myself, but I think we've seen the demands, and we see what the marketplace, you know, the Comcast, the CenturyLinks, the U.S. Internets, they are aiming for, and Google, they are aiming for that gigabit level of service, and there must be, they must have some ideas of what it's going to be used for.
Sure. Representative Simonson.
I can wait till he's done.
Okay, good. Any other questions for testify? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, Mr. Coleman, what's the relationship between upload speeds and economic development? Because I assume a 1 megabit would be kind of...
It is. So, you know, I think the Internet generally has been designed to provide content to people, YouTube videos and so on, essentially to sell product to people. And with the need for upload speeds is that people increasingly working from home, whether they're engineers or graphic designers or any other kind of creative people that are creating PowerPoints that are, you know, it's hard to create a PowerPoint now that's less than 10 or 20 megabits or megabytes of data. And so those activities that people need are just to stream upload. We have in Chisago County, where I'm working on economic development, they have a dome home manufacturer out in the countryside there. Their catalog is 5 gigabytes of data. And so people are designing their homes using these tools, and that's an up and down interactive experience. So that's an example for that company that does two-thirds of their business internationally out in Sunrise Township in Chisago County.
Any additional questions for the testifier? Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. Are there any other members of the public who should testify or voice concerns with the amendment? All right, seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion on the A8 amendment, not on the rest of the bill. Is there any members who want to talk about the A8 amendment before we adopt it? Representative Johnson and Mahoney.
Thank you, Representative Rothwell. I just wanted to clarify what's going on with the amendment then. So for grant awards, it's eligible for including wireless of speeds up to 10 to 1. I think that's, if I'm understanding it correctly. I don't hear anything different. And we're changing the definition on page 2, line 21 of unserved areas from what had been 25.3 to, rather than 10.1, 10.3.
Well, and I would say this caveat there, that under the current program, despite what the text of the language says, users who have download speeds of far less than 100 meg are being funded at that level. So what you said is accurate, but under the current statute, we have a wireless project that is being funded at levels far below this. So that's the caveat. Does the language right now even matter? Does the change even matter? Because right now we are funding a wireless project at a lower level. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think one thing I'm addressing is the unserved areas definition, which I think, frankly, we need more thorough discussion on from a variety of folks. That's where I was going with it. The change from 25.3 to 10-3. That's a huge change for grant applicability, and it just, I'm not sure what the right number is. I'm not trying to pontificate on that, but I'm just saying it's something that is not, it's not something you just simply do without some serious thought and discussion from all the parties that are involved.
Absolutely. And Representative Johnson, you bring up a good point. Again, we're not passing the bill today.
Right.
But I did feel normally when there's a author's amendment, we just say, hey, author amendment, get in the forum, we gavel it through. I thought it would be important, and Representative Baker agreed, that we get public testimony so people can begin to understand the complexity of not just the issue, but just this amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I have a question for you, because you've alluded to, on different days, you've alluded to the fact that there will be no omnibus bill, and then you've alluded to that there will be an omnibus bill. I know you're kind of packed in as the chair. You've got a lot of things on your plate. Is there a clarification you'd like to make which way we're going to go in this particular committee? Because I know, as some people have said, the government was fully funded last budgetary cycle, and there's no need for it. I'm just kind of wondering.
Sure.
The camp is coming in.
Well, Representative Mahoney, you bring up a couple of points here. First of all, the question of whether there's going to be an omnibus supplemental bill or whether the individual finance committees are going to pass their own articles and pass those separately. Historically, if we just look at historical precedent, the House has always wanted to pass individual finance bills, and the Senate has responded by sending over one bill. And so the House always fights for separate articles and separate bills, and we always lose. There always ends up being one omnibus supplemental bill. So whether we're going to send over one bill, no bill, or individual articles, I don't know. We're caucusing tonight, so maybe we'll know. And if things happen the way they have in the past, you may even find out before I do, Representative Mahoney. So I don't know the answer to that. I would expect that we're going to have some sort of omnibus bill, including finance appropriations, whether they're general fund or non-general fund, coming out of this committee with financial policy and policy. When it goes to Ways and Means, I don't know if that bill is going to travel separately or if it's going to get rolled into an omnibus supplemental bill. I expect that at some point in the process, the Senate will instruct that it's going to be one bill, and we can't make the Senate send us other bills to break it up. But I'm being candid with you, Representative Mahoney. I just don't know, and I don't think anyone knows right now. So, Representative Mahoney.
You have been trying to get some different bills out of the Senate for a couple of weeks, and to... Like you said, you haven't been real successful, but that's another piece. To the author, I got to understand, and again, I am, you know, even a 12-year-old can't help me on the internet. I mean, I'm pretty bad. I don't understand, but I do understand, having sat on these economic development committees for a long time, when we lower the standard for anything, if we set the bar, 99.9% of the time, those that we ask to hit that bar hit the bar and don't go any farther. Now, I don't claim to understand scalability or not, but I would bet if we set the bar, and I don't know where in here it gets to 10-3, but you've assured us that that's where you're going. What's the incentive for a wireless company or even a broadband fiber optic company? Well, no, that would just be the wireless. The wireless to get above the 10-3, because, you know, Greater Minnesota has been, I think they even have a bill in the House right now to get an advertising campaign to get people in their middle years to move to Greater Minnesota. If we don't provide them with the ability to earn a living out there, and 10-3 doesn't, from what I've heard, doesn't allow that, and that's likely to be where the bar is, and bar is set, and that's what they will meet, why wouldn't you want to have it at a 25-3, so at least there's a chance that when they hit that bar and they don't go above it, people can still make a living, although it'll only be slowly. So why are we going down? I don't get it. When you can't set, when you could set the bar at a higher level, as the last witness was talking about, and work for tomorrow's internet rather than yesterday's internet.
All right, Representative Baker, you get to answer the question first, and then I get to answer it after you. So, Representative Baker.
Thank you very much, Representative Baker. Representative Mahoney. I don't think anything in this bill sets us back. I think I've worked really hard to make sure that our speed goals are reasonable and attainable with our funding that we think we have today. The speed goals are going to change every year. We have got such a moving, fluid world with technology right now, I can't get my head around it either. And I will tell you that having wireless, though, as an option, and if it's a 10-3, I don't think there's a company out there right now that I think was mentioned earlier from an earlier testifier that wireless is being put up, and they thought 1 meg was great, now they're up to 5. They have to have scalable wireless or they won't have any customers. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that folks like my constituents in Canyon Lake County that have no service, they would kill for 10-3. They would love me if they had 10-3 right now at their homes. What I'm trying to do is get a bill together that we can actually all get to a common agreement that, hey, it's not 100 meg everywhere, but if you want to make the speeds that high, we ain't going very far, because then it's going to just, it's going to really complicate the matters of expanding it to the hardest areas of Minnesota. I really respect the work of the broadband task force that the governor put together. They have pored over these details. We have to give them tons of credit for being the smart people that they are, trying to educate folks like us that are like you, Representative Mahoney. We don't all understand this, every detail about this. But I will tell you, as I look at this overall bill and the amendments, we want to not exclude wireless to be a part of the program. If wireless isn't going to be compatible with 25.3, I don't think anybody's going to buy it. I don't think anybody's going to want to touch it because it's going to keep moving up. But I will tell you that I'm hoping for today's purposes we can get this bill in a form that I think is doable, and it'll expand lots of broadband in rural Minnesota. But when we're talking about such high numbers and high speeds and gigs and everything else, we're going to lose the focus of we want to get to the hardest areas first. So I hope that the committee keeps that in mind. I really believe this does not move us back at all. It gives us more options for the Office of Broadband to do their work in granting out more projects that will get more people plugged in. That is the impetus of what we're trying to do here, and I hope that we don't lose fact or that lose focus of the technicalities that will swallow us up if we don't keep that bigger goal in mind, Representative Mahoney.
Okay, so just 2 points, and then Representative Mahoney, if you want to have a follow-up, we can. And then Representative Clark, you're on the list. Is there anyone else who wants to ask a question on this amendment from the committee? Metza, you've got it. Simonson, you want back on too. Okay. So number one, this does not change the speed goals down, because under the current program, we are funding programs that are at levels lower than this amendment, which is a separate issue we can talk about, but one of the grant programs got funded at a lower rate than the current specifications. The second thing is, this is exactly like wastewater infrastructure. Okay, you look at the wastewater infrastructure system we have in place in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and in high density and medium density deployments, look at how we treat water. Now go into a low density area and look how we treat water. Do we bring wastewater infrastructure and sewer pipes to every single farm and to every single low density deployment? No, they have individual septic systems. Not because it's not because they want it that way, but there's simply limitations from low density. And what Representative Baker is doing here is he's acknowledging the reality of physics, which is if you tie yourself to fiber-intensive, in-the-ground infrastructure deployments, you're never going to reach low-density areas. You're just never going to do it. Same way if you did the same thing with wastewater infrastructure, you're never going to be able to get water pipes to every single individual farm in the state of Minnesota. And so that's the comparison here. Now, the wireless side, is someday it's going to be 100 megabit. It may be a lot sooner than people realize, but for right now, they're holding out for a Cadillac plan, and they're really being deferred into the future. So that's my comparison, and I'm probably talking too much. But Mahoney, and we'll go Representative Mahoney, then Clark, then Simonson, then Metza. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, you know, interesting that you bring up wastewater infrastructure and water supplies. It's kind of, I was thinking about making that comparison myself, but I realize what a false dichotomy it really is, because on a farm or a cabin, you have a water source, whether it's 50 feet down or 500 feet down. You have a multiple ways of doing the waste, and then you have a tank that has to be emptied. But if you look at how sewers are built, they're 5 foot, they're 60 inch pipes at the wastewater treatment facility, and at the edge of the Mesa line or whatever it is, they are 12 to 14 inches or even 18 inches because they know that they will extend that. Whether it's next year or 10 years down the road, they build for the future. That's how they build those wastewater infrastructure facilities. And same with the water lines, same with the gas lines. That's what they're supposed to do. But in individual houses, the code may call for a 4-inch line to a sewer. But you have to have a vent on a certain distance. Well, as soon as you hit that distance, you drop down, you drop it down to the bare minimum because that's the space you're using. And then you bump up as you get closer, farther and farther back. And what I'm trying to say is in buildings and in many areas, people will build to the minimum. And I have witnessed that in building construction for the last 30 years. It's the rare project where somebody takes into consideration, I may not own this building 5 years from now, but I still think I should make it bigger so that there's more capacity in case something changes 10 years down the road. So my belief is, and my guess is that industry will go to the lowest point where their dollars will stretch the farthest. And that means that we're going to be coming back 10 years or 20 years and redoing it. So why not, while we have it open, make it large enough to expand 5 years or 10 years or 25 years down the road? You know, we don't want to build more state buildings. We want state employees to do their work from home. I can't think of, a state employee that's not doing a PowerPoint. And as the testifier said, that takes a lot more bandwidth than what this would allow. So essentially you're saying keep all the people in state employees or business employees or any of the Fortune 500 companies all within set urban areas or places that have a large enough capacity, and that won't be out in, Bob's back 40. So, I think it's the wrong way to go to lower this standard, because industry will build to that standard.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, my question was not about this part of it. So, but could you call me right after we get to the end of it? Because I wanted to ask you a question about the committee.
All right. So I'm going to take the A-8 amendment. Is that all right, Representative Metzler? So all in favor of the A-8 amendment, please signify by saying aye. 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 Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A-8 amendment is adopted. So we're still having the same conversation, folks. We're still talking about same issues. Representative Isaacson, did you want to talk?
Yeah, I think I was going to let Simonson go ahead.
Okay, Representative Simonson first then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, my question is going to be to the author, but I have to ask a clarifying question of you, if I may, first.
Sure.
Primarily because I think I've heard you reference it at least three times now. Under current law, under the current program, eligible grants or expenditures, if you will, are for the acquisition or the installation of middle mile, last mile infrastructure scalable to 100 megabits. And I've heard you talk about, and I just want to clarify, are you saying that we have, the state of Minnesota has expended money in the form of a grant for some form of wireless technology that is not that?
No, it's a very good clarifying question, Representative Simonson. What you just said is absolutely correct, but the end users are not getting that infrastructure. So in a wireless deployment, the allocation, how it's being constructed, is absolutely, no one's breaking the law, right? But at the end of the day, customers don't care about what their middle infrastructure costs. They don't care what their backbone is. They want to know what their upload and download speeds are. And so that's through the wireless implementation. So with regards to what the customers are seeing and what's built into scalability, no one is investing in a backbone and capping it at 3 megabits. They couldn't do it if they tried. The technology doesn't exist. This is about standardizing with what the end users are experiencing. So that's why when people say that we're lowering the speed, that's just not the case. It's not what's happening. So Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for clarifying that, because that does help. Representative Baker, my question would be for you, and it really is around the same issue. And I have to say I'm a little bit confused, because in some of your comments you gave kudos to the governor's task force on broadband. And during this discussion about the A8, we've heard testimony from the chair of that task force that essentially said, you know, please don't do this. And having some history with how this language came to be, I have to say that we're talking about reducing, you know, what's available in the future, and that's really what this is. Nobody really knows what the future is going to bring in the area of broadband or what technology is. We can all probably safely assume that it's going to only get better and as such far more complicated. But I think the idea behind the original language was that, you know, the state of Minnesota will invest limited dollars into grants that are used for infrastructure that will last into the foreseeable future, right? And that's where my concern is, because we have under current law, and that's what I just asked Chair Garofalo about, we have under current law is that the grants can only be used and the money can only be spent for certain things, and that is for specifically the middle mile and the last mile, and it has to be scalable to 100 megabits. That's clear, and I think when that came to be, I won't say quite everybody, but I think most people understood that at least gave us some comfort in the fact that we were expending state of Minnesota taxpayer dollars on something that wouldn't have to be replaced in 5 or 10 or 15 years. And I think, you know, having worked on this a few years ago, some of the concerns that I heard was that, you know, investing in the state of Minnesota, if it's going to invest in economic development, you know, please do so, but please do so wisely. And I'm just concerned about your language that we've now adopted here with the A8, is that we've taken out, you know, the reference to the middle mile and last mile, but we've also taken out the scalability piece. And I think that's concerning to far more people than we realize, because it won't be realized perhaps for several years into the future. Meaning that if this language that we just approved in the A8 gets passed into law somehow, magically, there's potential that we're going to be investing money in grants for infrastructure that is perhaps going to be of little to no value in 10 or 15 years. And I'd just like you to maybe expand on that about, you know, where exactly are we going with this? Because we don't know what tomorrow is. And that's why we set it at a very high bar at 100. So I'm just curious, you know, what your thoughts are about the future. And are we, by lowering this from scalable to 100 down to 10 down, 1 up, I mean, if that's all the technology is capable for, and if that's all it has to be capable to do under this language, where are we at in 10 years?
Okay, Representative Baker, before you answer, no, Representative Simonson, you made a couple of statements in there that are opinion and not fact, and I'm not going to insta-fact check it, but what we are going to do is have the four panelists come down and get ready. Ms. Kelleher, Mr. Christensen, Mr. Schreiner, Mr. Wirtz, we're going to have you guys come down, have Representative Baker answer the question. And then we're just going to cover under current law the difference between underserved and unserved areas, what the standards are and what they apply to. Just those two things. But if those four panelists could come down, so then we're
Mr. Chair,
we're ready to go. Representative Simonson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to be clear. I'm not talking right now about unserved, underserved. It's specifically about the scalability piece of the infrastructure.
Representative Simonson, the scalability piece is relevant because underserved and unserved areas currently have different access to different technologies.
Yes, and Mr. Chair.
So that's
you're correct, but that is not my point. My point is about we're removing the language that requires the infrastructure that's installed under the grant
to be scalable to 100.
The okay. No, but that's all right. Representative Baker, to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simonson, I think, again, our goals with this are not any less than the current goals of the State Broadband Office. 25.3 are the numbers that I'm looking at. We provided wireless as an option here because it's already been kind of approved through the office. I'd like to hear from the chair soon about what that means in a more technical aspect. I think that they can give that delivery a lot better. If I know 10.1, 10.3 is not good speed in the next couple of years. I know that. But we should not eliminate wireless as being a part of this component. 25.3, if you're going to put wireless in anywhere and it isn't scalable up to 25.3, they're wasting their money, and we should not spend a nickel on that stuff. And that's the office's granting process should eliminate that. They should, with their due diligence, see that. And that is my, the purpose of trying to give them better direction for these kind of grants. They have to hit the 25.3s, and that's right now in our plan of 2022. That is the state broadband goal of 2022 is right now 25 down, 3 up. So that might change before 2022 as well. So I think we just need I'd like to hear the testifiers. Let's get some of the information out. If I'm missing something technically on that I'm not hitting, I'd like to know that. I do not want to take this program back. If I'm missing a word, if we need to change something here, let's talk about that.
Okay.
We're not done with this. I'm very open to those ideas as well. So let's do the testifiers.
Let's have the four testifiers come down. If there's not enough chairs up there, put four chairs up there. And we're going to...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
Can I just ask my question then? Because
sure.
We're going to go on for a while. I wanted to hear you. When in the beginning you started talking about whether or not we might have a target. And I didn't understand when you think you might find out.
We're caucusing tonight. I don't know when that decision...
He said he'd call me.
Yeah, I'm sure Isaacson will know before I do.
Is it likely that you're going to know this week or next week?
Representative Clark, I just don't know. If I knew the answer and I was going to lie to you, I'd just tell you. But I just honestly don't know the answer.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
I would just lie to you.
Sorry. Well, all right. Welcome to the committee. We have our all-star panelists up here. And I don't know if you guys want to, each of you can just cover a couple of minutes of your presentation and then be available for members' questions. But we'll start with you, Speaker Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for your attention to this issue. I think you all have been delivered, again, a copy of the 2015 Governor's Task Force report. It actually says 2016 on it. That's because we delivered it in 16, but it actually is looking at the year back. And so I just want to review for you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that the governor's order that we work under as task force members directs us to come up with a plan for the governor, and we actually think of all of you too as our audience, to connect all Minnesotans, businesses, and individuals with a plan border to border with broadband, high-speed broadband. And this year, I think the FCC helped make that easier by updating their definition of broadband with a speed of 25 and 3. There are lots of speeds running around out there, as you've already heard, but 25 and 3 is the most basic speed that we use. And so when you hear us talk about this, we also talk about really a priority of the unserved Minnesotan. And so that's another thing that you want to keep in mind. That is the Minnesotan who really doesn't have a speed that gets them connected to the internet, able to do the most basic tasks. And when we talk about that, we think about this list that's on page 9 of the task force report, and you may want to pull that out. It starts at the top, and that basic task is personal communications. So that's the things you think about every day, your constituents being able to email you, a basic email. But when you go down to the bottom, when you talk about that goal of 2026 and having all Minnesota businesses and Minnesotans having one provider that would be able to provide to them 100 megabits by 20, which is the other goal that we have that's not reflected in Representative Baker's bill yet, but is in the Senate bill, when you think about that, that's more like something that would be at the bottom of this list, like your nursing homes being able to transmit the electronic medical record, which many of them cannot do seamlessly today, or your hospitals being able to do multiples of those at a time. Hospitals have better connections, but I would tell you long-term care facilities, not so good. And the ability of elderly people in their homes to have their blood pressures checked or their weights checked or whatever, that is not so good today. And that's what we're talking about in the future. When you want to talk about what the future is, it's about my 92-year-old mother who lives in Judson Township who can't connect today, but hopefully in the future, her children who live nearby who are 65 and 70-year-olds will be able to connect and live in their home and age in place. So that's the future that we're talking about for Minnesotans when we talk about the broadband task force. I want to highlight a couple of other issues that you're going to hear a little bit more about from the panelists. You'll hear a lot in this legislative session about calf $2 coming in the state. And this is not a cow. It's not a baby calf. These are important federal dollars that our incumbent carrier providers have raised their hand and said they will take. Those dollars are important dollars, but they have huge restrictions on them about the places in the state they will go. And it also means you still need to do your job and put money into this fund to connect more Minnesotans to broadband. This is a $3 billion job we have to do to connect all Minnesotans, and we're only asking the public to do a small part of it. In the past 4 years, you've invested $30 million in this program. It's leveraged $41 million of private investment. It's terrific. You can do more this year with one-time dollars. And think about that great, what's going to happen in the future. I know that Mr. Schreiner is going to talk about what the CAF $2 are going to do, but it's still a big hurdle to make. So I want to talk just a little bit more about the speed goal issue, because that's probably one of the biggest fights you'll have. So this issue of 10.1, 10.3, what to set it at, 25.3, 100 by 100 symmetrical. So there's a difference between a goal and what the fund program has. So please keep that in mind. I think it's good to have a goal that is something we can measure the state at, that we can also know that the Federal Communications Commission is also measuring in terms of the federal government. And so that's one of the reasons that we chose to say it's the speed of the FCC 25 and 3. We think that's important. And then this 100 by 20 is a stretch goal, and we think that is important as well. But the important work of the 100 scalable is also a goal. And so in some cases, goals can be too little and too small. It's like the three bears. You know the story of the three bears. Sometimes it's just too small. And that little bear, remember, the bowl was just too small? And sometimes the goal is just too big. And the big bear, too much. But sometimes it's just right. And so we think on the task force, we got it just right with the 25 and 3 and the 100 by 20. So please keep that in mind as you move forward. We also encourage you to push for a target that is large enough in the House that will meet with the Senate and the governor to make, with one-time dollars, an investment for Minnesotans that will make a meaningful difference in the economic outcomes for Minnesotans in the long term, that will make a difference in their lives for years to come.
We are way down the analogy road today, aren't we? We're doing a great job. Thank you, Speaker Kelleher. Yeah. Mr. Schreiner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andy Schreiner. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for CenturyLink, and I was asked today to talk a little bit about the Connect America. Talk a little bit about the Connect America Fund program, and I'll do so more from a general overview of the program rather than company specific perspective. I've got a few slides. I know we're running late on time, that I will try to. This one? I'll just start, and while Harry figures this out for me. The CAF program was a major shift of federal policies, changing the support for telecommunication services to broadband. So essentially, the FCC was saying, victory in the war to bring our telephone service to everyone. Let's pivot the funds now to broadband. The initial rollout of the program impacted only the larger carriers in the U.S. This started about 5 years ago, and it's evolved over the last 5 years, and we're finally at a point now where we have CAF 2, and we're getting those dollars into the system. CAF 1 was a one-time infusion, the quick money out the door by the FCC. I think about Minnesota, there was something around $15 million spent here in CAF 1. Okay, thank you. CAF 2, where we're at today, is just now starting to evolve. We're in the first year of CAF 2. You can see the slide in front of you right now identifies the four companies that have accepted CAF 2 support from the FCC: CenturyLink, Frontier, Windstream, and Consolidated. I think Brent can talk a little bit about what the FCC is planning to do for some of the smaller carriers when he speaks. It's a six-year program. It requires these four providers to build service to 170,355 unserved locations in Minnesota. So it gets broadband out into those rural areas. And the FCC has identified those locations at the census block level. In addition, it's not just a hand the money over to the providers. Providers are putting their own dollars in to match some of these federal dollars. Risks. There are some risks to providers for accepting this support. Accuracy, you had to do cost estimates, try to figure out what it's going to cost you to build to these areas. Was the amount of funding and support adequate? Accuracy of your revenue estimates, can you get a return on that investment? You know, things like take rates and churn are a big issue within our industry. This next bullet, availability of contractors and fiber resources. You know, there's a large number of companies seeking extra engineering help, extra construction help, more fiber, and so that's a factor that you had to take into this, as well as the six-year capital commitment makes some other investments potentially challenging down the road. Next slide is support by carriers. It breaks down who gets what and what your build-out obligations are. You can see in my company's case where we made the commitment by the end of this program to reach 114,739 households. Consolidated, they're the former Inventus down in Mankato, in case you're not familiar with them. Frontier is the second largest telephone company in the state, and they're in the program as well. There are some service requirements around CAF, just to give you an idea of some of the issues that we have to deal with. One is the speed, and we've heard a lot of discussion about speed. 10.1 is a minimum usage. There are cap limitations, so you can't have data caps. Pricing, you can't price different in rural and urban areas. The final bullet is one that I think all the providers that participate in this program will be watching closely. There's a testing requirement. You're going to be required, and they're going to be tested to make sure that you're meeting those minimum speeds. The schedule for build-out by the FCC is front-loaded. If you look at the requirements, 40% of your build has to be done the first 2 years of the program. And so you're talking lightly populated areas of the state, and you have to take the most heavily populated of those lightly populated areas and get to those in the first 2 years to meet the build-out commitments. And then you can see it's 20% a year through 2020. And then just to wrap up, this map gives you a sense of kind of in this region, and particularly in Minnesota, the coverage area. These are the CAF 2 eligible areas. Now, the one piece of this is just because an area is CAF 2 eligible, it doesn't mean that they're automatically going to be getting broadband. There are more eligible households than there are requirements to build to. So while my company's requirement was 114,736, we have about 140,000 households in CAF 2 eligible areas. And so that's part of the process that's going on, the engineering process that we're going through. And then, you know, this last map maybe breaks it down a little easier for you to see which carriers have accepted CAF 2 money. The red is CenturyLink. The green is the Enventis or Consolidated Territory down in the Mankato area. Blue is Frontier, and yellow is Windstream, primarily in the central part of the state around St. Cloud. So that's my quick overview of the Connect America Fund program. I'd be happy to answer any questions if members have them.
I want to make sure we hear from the other two testifiers, but just one quick question, that is, so what is the CAF 2 funding, not nationwide, but for Minnesota, and over what time frame?
If I back up to that previous slide, I don't know how to do that, Harry, I'll just talk to it.
Is it not the back arrow?
I can get Representative Mahoney to help me.
We'll be here a long time. We'll be a long time.
So you can see the locations.
This is per year.
Yes, through 2020.
Okay, so $85 million a year, per year for 6 years. And does it go up from 85 each year, or is this $85 million each year?
It's consistent.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. And we're the trade association that represents traditional landline telephone companies. We have, and one thing Mr. Schreiner didn't mention was where CAF came from. And just to give you a little quick background on where it came from, it came from the Universal Service Program that's been in place for many years. And the majority of my members are small rural providers that have used universal service funds to deploy telephone service and now broadband throughout the very most rural parts of Minnesota. So we obviously have a very vested interest in this whole discussion. Of the broadband grants that have been awarded, about three-fourths of them went to my members in the first round, and of the 17 grants in the second round, 13 of the 17 went to MTA member companies to deploy broadband in very rural parts of the state. As an industry, if you take in landline telephone, cable, wireless, we've invested over $705 million in capital expenditures just in 2015. So that kind of puts this a little bit in perspective when we're talking about broadband grants. So that's $705 million in 2015 of investments that are not tied to broadband grants. We're also looking at investing about $713 million in 2016. Now that money goes to a variety of things. It goes to deploying more broadband, but more importantly, it goes to maintaining the existing network and infrastructure. As you know, and probably know, that fiber is great, and it's where we're going for as far as bandwidth, whether it's backhaul or to the end user. But it's the electronics and the things that make it go, cell towers and things like that, those radios, those all have to be replaced. And the life expectancy is anywhere from 3 to 5 years on that equipment. So that's it's not build it once and then you're done. It's something that's ongoing and continuing. CAF is not enough. Well, let me back up. So the Connect America Fund and the CAF 2 program that the four carriers have was explained. We're still waiting on the Connect America Fund for the rest of us. So there's over 70 independent telephone companies in the state of Minnesota. Four of them have Connect America Fund money, and the rest of us are sitting around waiting to see what's going to happen from the FCC. They haven't come out with their new rules yet. We've been waiting since 2011. We're told that an order is forthcoming from them on that, so we'll see. Right now, we're getting universal service dollars, and that's frozen at the 2011 numbers. So we're waiting to see what's going to happen as that moves, universal service support moves from telephone to broadband. So we're hoping, maybe as soon as tomorrow. So that's affecting all of this too. But CAF dollars aren't going to be enough. If we're going to get to the last farm place in the most rural parts of the state, we're going to have broadband grants to do it. And so when you're having the discussion about speeds, they have to be focused on that. And when we talk about the difference between aspirational goals as set forth in the task force report, that's different than using targeting dollars to get to the last person and the last farm. And that's why that discussion is so very important. I think the last two rounds of grants have worked. I think we need to be careful about the tweaking that we do. We as an organization are not focused on the dollar amounts. We're letting that, leaving that up to you and your colleagues in the Senate to determine how big that fund should be. But we are very focused and very committed to working with the author and others to make sure that we get the criteria right so that we do use those grants and get them to everybody that they need to go to. So with that, I'd be happy to stand for questions and move on.
Okay, well, I want to make sure we hear from our chair. So welcome to the committee. You say your name again for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Wirtz, State President for AT&T Minnesota. I just want to start with really a theme, and really it's the future is here, but there is no final frontier, unlike what Captain Kirk would say in Star Trek. And really, if you look at your packets, I'll start off a little bit about kind of what our presence is here, AT&T in Minnesota. We just announced a couple of weeks ago 30 enhancements of our network in St. Louis County. This is part of the more than $500 million we've spent in Minnesota since 2011. We provide more coverage here as a wireless carrier than any other carrier, and I can tell you that's a legally vetted statement, so I can say that with authority. But it also is indicative of where the wireless industry is going and the speed that we are moving. In 10 years, we will have gone from 3G wireless to, by 2020, 5G wireless. 5G was just very quietly being talked about more than 6 months ago, and it is already out, the horse is already out of the barn. We are actively testing that speed. Verizon's testing that speed. We know Japan and China are testing those speeds. By the time the international speed standard is set in 2018, we will start to see the first deployments of that service probably by 2020. And to give an example, and it's not just taking what we have today with 4G LTE, it's really kind of really an enhanced new technology, stuff that I have to go to my engineers to try to explain it to even me. But it's going to, you'll have gigabit speed with 5G service. It is going to be a game changer for broadband, for the wireless industry, for really people's in their lives. This is why we're spending a lot of time as a company on what we call the Internet of Things. Not a term that we invented, but we were one of the first early adopters of putting our resources into these type of services. And our Internet of Things looks like connected car, connected life, connected health. We have 7 million cars that are connected to our network now as part of connected car. We have relationships with virtually every automotive manufacturer with 4G hotspots, some of the smart car driving things that are coming online. Connected health, many companies are operating here in Minnesota with devices and monitoring. I heard some remarks by Tim Cook a couple of weeks ago, the president and CEO of Apple, and how an Apple Watch saved a football coach's life. He looked at his watch, his heart rate was really fluctuating, and he went to the team doctor and said, "You better go see the doctor." And the doctor told him, "Had you not come to me today, you might have been dead tomorrow." That watch saved his life. Connected wearables, blood pressure monitoring, glucose monitoring, all those things are being done wirelessly on networks like AT&T's. And then you get into the Fitbits and really sensor monitoring, things like that. The average home right now has 5 connected mobile devices, and we see that going up to 500 by 2020. We have over 25 million connected devices in our network right now, and that's going to go, as an industry, up to 50 billion by 2020 with all the networks and people out there. So we've gone from 3G to 4G LTE to now, the prospect of 5G. The future is here, and it's going to get even faster. And I think that's why, why do we invest? Why do we continue to build these networks? We don't build them when we go into an area, well, we're at 3G, we're done. Consumer demand drives that. It puts stresses on our network. They want more applications for the services that the network can provide. And that's why it requires a constant investment in bringing those services to more Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. So, again, AT&T investment since 2011, what was the number?
$525 million. Okay. We're roughly about $100 million a year in investment in Minnesota.
Mr. Christensen, what was the investment? Can you parse that down by broadband or high-speed bandwidth? Can you give us a number?
Mr. Chairman, I can't break it down to broadband, but telecommunications, which used to be that the internet ran on the telephone network. Now the telephone network runs on the internet. So at $705 million in capital expenditures for 2015.
And the CAF spending each year is?
Mr. Chairman, $85
million. And so what we're trying to do as part of this goal is to find as much investment as is, it doesn't cover all areas. So we're trying to find out what's the highest priority, best way, quickest way to deploy these resources to cover those areas that are not covered by these funds. Speaker Kelleher, did you want to have the? You want to make a comment on this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think the important part to say is that through the work of the task force, what we found is that what you are doing through the public dollars, partner with the private dollars, because it is a one-to-one match, and actually it's a little more than that, is that where there's market failure in the private dollars, where the return on investment for that co-op or that private company is not going to reach that business or farm, that's where those dollars are supposed to go into. And so I know there are people who really want this to be an economic development program for a city or a town, but that's not really what the Governor's Broadband Task Force has been about. The Governor's Broadband Task Force and the work of the task force has been connecting the most remote Minnesotans, and that's what the fund has been about. Because you can see that there's been a lot of investment being done out there, and so being able to say that no, CAF 2 isn't going to reach every Minnesotan, and all these other dollars isn't going to reach every Minnesotan, but that what we owe to Minnesotans to reach them border to border, especially in the most remote parts of Minnesota, whether it's northwest or northeast or southwest or southeast, is to get them connected where the market is failing them. Because if it costs $10,000 or $12,000 to connect that farm, that provider's not going to go out there and connect that farm. And we need to do something about that. And to be able to do that, then that's what this fund is about.
So, thank you, Speaker Kelleher. Any of our four panelists want to wrap anything up before we go to Representative Baker for a closing comment? Thank you very much for your testimony. I think everyone on the committee, if they're paying attention, definitely learned something today. Thank you. So, Representative Baker, we are over our time. As I said, we're going to be having an additional hearing or additional hearings on this matter going forward. Do you want to offer any closing comments?
You know, I did, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Again, the testimony, I do wish we had had more time, because this, again, as you heard, is a very complex issue. You know, hearing the concerns of my colleagues here on the committee, I want to talk about this wireless thing real quick before we wrap up. If this is really the problem of this bill, you know, we've got a lot of good things here. We've got stuff for low-income areas. We've got some mapping things going on. If this wireless and the speed is a problem, I'll pull it. That's not a problem for me. Wireless is not something for me that if that's the real problem, I don't have an issue with that. I think what we're doing is we're taking away choice. And that's why I wanted to make it part of this. We're taking away some choice for some folks and some providers that could provide this speed. I'm hearing gigabytes coming out of AT&T. They're saying that they're not going to design this stuff unless it can really expand. But if we want to pull that out, I'm willing to do that today. I want to listen and hear. It's what we took all these notes from the other committee, from Chair Gunther's committee. I'm willing to do that. If that's what we need to do to get off this dime, that's fine. I want to make sure the speeds are clear. Yeah, we want to make sure that today, as Chair Kelleher said, 25.3 is our number today. That's a goal that we all think we can live with. But I just think that it's unfortunate. I think we have a choice here, and I'll do that if that's what the committee desires. No problem with that.
All right. We're going to adjourn Representative Mahoney because we're over time already. But obviously, this is a conversation that is going to continue to happen for quite some time, both on the policy and the appropriation side. So thank you all members for the engaged debate and for the questions. And with that, we are adjourned.